Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world.
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Glad to have you. Not sure if you heard any of that, but glad to have you. Welcome aboard to the Hard Truth Studios on this Wednesday. Jim Coyle with you as always. Always a pleasure and always fun on Wednesdays, of course. Looking forward to it. Dylan Sin, Kyle Nedenrip, and Rick Bozich should be joining us on the program today. Looking forward to that. Always a great lineup. Always great to have you guys along as well. Hope you're doing well. As beautiful out there today. And plenty to get to. Indiana got big man coming to visit. 7'3", as you probably saw yesterday, breaking on Hard Truth. Or breaking on the Hoosier.com. As they brought that information to you first. And that is why you should be subscribing to thehoosier.com. I'm telling you, they are going to be pumping out the information, inside information. As a matter of fact, they've got a piece in there right now talking about how the summer workouts are going, who's doing what, and talks about Trent Sisley. It talks about Lamar Wilkerson, his shooting. And there's a lot of other things in there. So, plus, I think there's like 8 articles that came out yesterday alone. Crazy. So, hey, guys, I'm telling you, go to thehoosier.com and subscribe. Dollar for the first month, 50% off for the first month, year. So, you cannot beat that. But plenty to get to today. Looking forward to it as the Pacers. Oh, yeah. Pacers back tonight. Almost forgot about that. Man, Pacers in an important, very important game. Was this game three? Four. Game four, right? No, this is, I'm confused. Oh, yeah, this is game three. They played, just played the two out in Oklahoma City, where they split those. But for the Pacers to maintain home court advantage, you need to win this game or you've given it back. And you don't want to do that. And if then you put yourself in a must-win situation going forward. So let's see what they can get done. Tonight's a very important game for them to make sure that they want to win an NBA title. They're just things you got to do. Now, doesn't mean you can't be, when you're at a corner, you come back and you do things. And they've done that all season, as we've seen. So hopefully they won't have to do that. And they'll get back to playing Pacer basketball tonight and come back with a win. Just get back in front of that home crowd. Speaking of, great piece by Mike DeCourcy. Make sure you're checking that out at the Sporting News on Indiana and its love for basketball and how it is different here. So Dylan Sin about set to join us as well. Looking forward to that. We'll talk about all those things. Charlie Hughes coming up, the top 100. Louisville, when we cut to Rick, UK football loses its assistant head coach to become Louisville's head of operations or something. But that stuff usually doesn't go over very well when you do that. That's like going from Purdue to Indiana or vice versa. Not good. Appreciate you. Yeah, slowly getting better, man. Slowly getting better. I appreciate that, Fred, very much. So, yeah, Brian says talking about the big. Yeah, he's also visiting the land of the Giants, Purdue. I didn't see that. So, we'll talk about that with Dylan, because as soon as I saw that, I'm like, uh-oh. Well, there you go. Hey, we'll hit our first break so we don't have to make Dylan wait. We'll get to it from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com and subscribe and do that for us. Appreciate you. All right. Dylan Sin will be with us here in a minute. He was with us and I saw him drop out. So hopefully he's on his way back and we'll get to talking to him about things. But plenty going on in Indiana, like I said, and a lot coming up with the NBPA Top 100 camp. Team camps this weekend in Indiana also going on. And that list is large. The teams that Jeffersonville plays Fishers, a rematch. How about that? Just getting right off the bat. So we'll see about that. I saw that on the schedule. I'm like, oh my. So lots of great games are set up in these team camp situations, which not sure that, you know, means a lot, but it's always for bragging rights. It doesn't matter. So you definitely want to play well. Plus, these guys get the opportunity, these kids, to play in Cook Hall, but more importantly, get to play in Assembly Hall. Games are in Assembly Hall and a Cook Hall all day going on. So we'll be out there checking that out. The Hoosier.com will be out there checking that out as well. So make sure you you got to get subscribed, man. There's a bunch in there right now about what's been going on inside of summer workouts. So you're missing out on that. But it's the second evaluation period coming up. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette joining me now. Looks like you got your camera clean. Looked like you were having some problems with your camera.
Yeah, I was in a room where it was too bright, so I had to move.
That's just because your star is so bright, man.
That's right. Glad we're in agreement on that one.
There we go. Hey, the second live evaluation period of the offseason is here as the NBPA Top 100 camp takes place down in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Numerous Indiana basketball targets competing down there. The first day of the begins Tuesday. That is without coaches. Wednesday and Thursday then opens up for coaches to attend. There is expected to be a strong Indiana basketball presence, with head coach Darren DeVries expected to be there as well. But some of the Indiana targets: Sammy Jackson, Latrell Almond, Anthony Thompson, Arifin Dion, Ethan Taylor, Davion Atkins, Tay Kinney, Trey Thompson, Collins Onyeka, Cameron Williams, Bryson Howard, Cole Clower, Bruce Branch, Ryan Hampton. It's just a lot of names, man.
Yeah, I mean, for Darren DeVries and his staff, it is one of those things where they go, and we're kind of seeing it in real time. They go directly from building their team through the portal for next season to getting ready for the next recruiting class. There really is no break for these guys, and they have hit the ground running. That's kind of the thing here, is they went directly from, okay, we've built out our roster for the coming season, to we are going to be aggressive on high school recruiting. And so it is – they have hit the ground running. I think that that's pretty impressive what they've done, getting all these offers out and then getting on the road.
Yeah, no, that's something that has been no. Yeah, the offers that we've already seen, they've been at it. I mean, immediately. It was almost like they were doing both at the same time, trying to not ignore recruiting, but having to fill the roster. Because as soon as they got that done, it was boom. They were on it, and they were. You've got to give them credit. It's going to be interesting to see the team that they have put together, how they do. They're they're together right now in summer workouts, and there's some been reports out. There's some reports at the Hoosier.com and in the forums, on the insider forums there, about how certain guys are playing. I think some people would find it interesting on who's doing what. So go in there if you can and check that out. But to continue that, they want to upgrade. It's just like Kurt Cignetti, and I hate to always use him as an example, but it's a great example. Even with the team he had this year, their goal was to do what? To upgrade. They had to be better. They found out they weren't good. They weren't great on offensive line, which is not something we didn't know, but it showed glaringly. And so therefore that had to be fixed. Went out, got those pieces and got better. And that's what Indiana's attempting to do. But Indiana basketball is probably going to make a bigger jump fast, because they're not going to do as maybe they don't do as well in the first year. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. It's a very, very, very competitive Big Ten conference this year, man, at the top, as it usually and always is. No idea what Michigan State's going to be like, so that's scary, because Michigan is my team right now to beat. Purdue is everybody else's favorite pick. Illinois. The list goes on. You could just name all a bunch of names, but it's just the depth. So it's going to be interesting to see how Darren DeVries does in his first season, how he attacks this league and these coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talked about Illinois. It is interesting that they have so many guys from overseas. We've talked about that a little bit, is that they have, I think, four or five guys from Europe. They've really embraced having kind of that new wave of guys from overseas. They're going to be physical, and they're going to be tough, and they're going to be experienced, because that's just kind of who they are. And so it is one of those things where a lot of teams are turning over their roster. I put Purdue near the top too, because they're bringing so much back. Right. Like, Michigan is very talented, but they're turning over a lot of their roster. Michigan State is turning over a lot of their roster. Purdue is bringing back just about everyone and then adding a couple of pieces. Right. So I think that they have an advantage. They'll have an advantage early on, especially because, unlike so many other teams, they are bringing back four starters essentially. And so they have a chance to really hit the ground running in that way, where a lot of other teams, including Indiana, are trying to find themselves over the course of the summer, which is helpful as well.
Absolutely, and that's what they have to do. As the recruiting periods that are open right now, they're making hay. I don't want to act like they're doing all these great things. They're doing what other staffs do. We're just not used to that, to seeing that had gotten away from the coaches Indiana had, because that's how it had been with coaches out doing what they're supposed to be doing, recruiting, and that's what you have to do. So they're out doing that in abundance, though, in force. They also have a staff that is really good at it, and that's another huge difference. No offense against any of the former staffers, but no one stood out. Recruiting wise, it just no one stood out as far as, man, that guy can get these guys, or he's got it going on here, or this. Nothing. Well, each one of these guys has kind of a niche on what they do well and what they can do. So it's going to be refreshing to see how that plays in to the lineup Indiana can put together.
Yeah, they very clearly went and made recruiting a huge, huge priority when they were putting together their assistant coaching staff. Kenny Johnson and Rod Clark are two of the best in the business at that. They are really, really good just recruiters. Drew Adams obviously is incredibly well connected in the recruiting industry and will be helpful in that area as well. So they really did go all in on that area. I think that's probably a smart way to go, because the talent acquisition is so huge right now. So much of this, when you are turning your roster over so much every single year, you need someone who is going to be able to talk to these kids, especially when you're talking about the portal, right? You have, 2 weeks, maybe, if that, to convince a kid to come visit and then to convince him to be a part of your program. And so you need guys who are going to connect with the kids. Indiana has that with this staff. And I think that's a reflection of Darren DeVries' approach for this program, is to try to figure out, hey, how do we make sure that this thing is can build on itself year over year over year? And being a really good recruiting staff is a big part of that.
Yeah, and recruiting is a big part. It's not, I don't know if it's quite as big as it used to be, but it's still big because it's the basis of your program. It kind of shows how you're trying to operate. You have to find the mix between guys that you're bringing in, some of which are going to be there for a couple of years, some may not be. And that's okay, because if you've got a guy that's one and done, I don't care. If I was looking at it from a fan, you're going to turn away a Cooper Flagg? No, because he's a difference maker. If they're difference makers, yeah, you're going to take them. People whine about one and dones. I'm not saying you want a team full of them, but you kind of need them. You need guys that are going to be NBA draft picks. That's just, and I say that just because it's factual. If you want to compete at the elite level, you've got to have elite players. And I'm not saying you have to have a roster full of them, but you have to have them. It's just, it's factual. You know, look at the national champions. Always guys that are NBA draft picks on those rosters. Doesn't have to be a dozen, but you have them. You have guys that just either have exploded. We've seen that in the last few years with the transfer portal guys that come from places like, wow, he came from where? Dalton Connect. He started where? And then boom, it happens, and it's great. And we're going to continue to see that. I noticed Iowa, Dylan, at least five players from Drake. I mean, you want to talk about Kurt Cignetti bringing players from James Madison. Gee whiz. What's his name? Ben McCollum. Yep. He wiped Drake out. Yep. I mean, you want to talk about leaving somebody high and dry. Whoo! Drake lost their coach and the most of their best players gone to Iowa. So Iowa has just become Drake southeast, north, or west, whatever direction it is. Of Iowa, I don't know, but I was like, I started counting. I'm like, I'm like, holy cow! I'm like, five of them, including Sturts, the Sturts kid.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because, at least part of it is because those guys were McCollum's kids when he brought them to Drake in the first place from Northwest Missouri State, right? Sturts is one of those, and a couple of other ones, I believe, are guys that he brought along with him. So they're following him. They followed him from Division II. To Drake, and now they're following him from Drake to Iowa. So those are his guys, and he was able to bring them along. And that was one of those things that it was tough for Darren DeVries, because he wasn't able to bring guys along from West Virginia other than Tucker DeVries, obviously, because he'd only been there for 1 year. Right now, obviously, McCollum had been there for only a year, but he had brought guys with him. DeVries didn't really bring many players from Drake to West Virginia with him, so he wasn't able to bring many players from West Virginia to IU with him. So that was another part of this, was that he had to build his roster almost entirely from guys that weren't his own, right? Like, Kirsten Eddie came in, flipped the roster, but it was so many James Madison dudes, right? So that made this offseason even more difficult for DeVries. I think he was able to do a really good job of it. He got Tucker, obviously. He got Connor Enright, who was with him at Drake and then went to DePaul. But other than that, they had to find guys, identify talent in the portal, and do it quickly. I think that's what makes it so impressive is they didn't really, like, import a roster like a Ben McCollum did, like a Kurt Cignetti did last year. And they were still able to find guys that I think are going to fit together relatively well. And I think that if it does come to pass that they win 22, 23, 24 games, it's a pretty impressive job to do that when you had basically no guys on the roster when you took over and you weren't able to import guys. Like Pat Kelsey last year at Louisville brought in several guys from College of Charleston, right? Mark Pope from Kentucky brought in guys from BYU.
Did he bring a lot of guys from College of Charleston?
He brought
roster.
At least two or three that I remember. DeVries didn't really do that outside of Tucker, who is obviously.
I was going to point out Pat Kelsey as the guy who pretty much filled his roster with new players. I don't remember maybe two guys that come over, but I don't think any of them were impact on Louisville's season. And not only did he fill that roster amazingly well, as Indiana fans saw last year, he's added to it. And so Louisville is one of those teams you're going to have to look out for this season.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done it again. They had to do that. They are in the same position that IU is probably going to be in next year, where they had a really good season in his first year under Pat Kelsey. He was able to flip that roster and take them back to the tournament and say, hey, this is not going to be a years long rebuild. But on top of that, now they have to go get transfers again because a lot of those guys were one-year guys, which is exactly what IU did. So IU's going to have to be in the transfer portal for probably four or five guys next year. And so can you, if you have a good first season, can you use that momentum to make it a good second season? Can you build on top of that? And that's where the name of the game is right now. Dusty May is in the same position at Michigan where he flipped that roster in 1 year. He had a really, really good season. Okay, can you build on top of that with new guys? Can you find another Danny Wolf, right? And that is what IU is. Probably if IU is a decent team this year, decent to good, they're going to need to do that again next offseason and say, hey, all right, how do we find the next Lamar Wilkerson? How do we find the next Tucker DeVries and make sure that we keep this thing going?
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. It's you're always chasing. And then how many guys do you bring in your recruiting class? I know that you know there's certain number of players that you have to fill, but how many new players do you bring in? I just don't see a team bringing in more than four, especially unless one of those is one of those immediate impact players, someone who is going to be able to play immediately. It's just because you need that experience. I think that I keep saying that. I think that this is eventually going to catch up with Matt Painter. He brought in five last season. It was supposed to be six, but that can get mixed up with the transfer portal now. But when you have that many in a class, that's dangerous, especially for someone who has not used the transfer portal hardly at all. It'll catch up to Purdue where they will have to do that at some point because you're not going to be bringing in five freshmen every year.
Yeah, and to Matt Painter's credit, I think he recognized that, and he talked about that a little bit during the NCAA tournament this year, where basically he's like, look, we're going to lose some guys, and we're going to have to go in the portal. And they did go in the portal. They only brought in one freshman this year, Anton West, who's a combo guard for them. And then they brought in Oscar Clough from the portal, who was the leading rebounder in the country last year at South Dakota State. And so that really fills a hole for them. They had a need for a guy who could really crash the boards, and that helps them. And then they also went and they brought in a European with Omer Meir, the kid from Israel, who they expect to help them right away. So they did a combination of things. They got one freshman, one transfer, and one kid from Europe. And obviously the kid from Europe is also a freshman eligible as well. But I think Matt Painter did a really good job this offseason of he kind of changed his stripes a little bit and didn't go with five freshmen again, because obviously they had the big class last year, as you said, but he was able to do it his way. He was able to do it with, we're not going to just bring in guys that five new guys for 1 year and then cycle it out next year. These are guys that are going to be foundational pieces for our team, they believe. And you can still have continuity year over year. I think that's really impressive the way he was able to do that.
Yep, he certainly is. Hey, we've got to, we don't have to take a break yet. We'll talk about football next. But the House settlement has come, and it's ready to go. And that begins in whatever the today's date is, 3 weeks. That kicks in about 3 weeks. Checks start going out. I mean, how happy? To be a college athlete now. I mean, that's why these guys are staying, a lot of them. Like, well, the hell am I leaving? I'm making 6-7 figures. And it's serious. If I were a college athlete, especially one that was, you know, who was it? Daggone. I don't remember who it was, but and I'm trying to think, it may be a Big Ten team they came back to, but pulled their name back out of the draft, NBA draft, and was likely a first-round pick, they said. And I'm like, wow. So that is the difference today, because back not that long ago, guys that wrongly even thought they were a second-round pick were putting their name in the draft. How many times did we see guys enter their names in the draft and we're all thinking, what the hell is he thinking? Seriously, you're like, what the hell is this guy thinking? Because it was dumb. Now it's kind of the opposite. Guys that are, you might think would stay in the draft are like, man, now I'll hang out here for another year at least, and I'll take this easy money. And not that it's easy, they still have to play the games and all that, but it's changed the game with guys staying in that regard too, which makes the game better. Everything is getting better. That's the one thing that I don't think people can deny. Football, basketball, both better. The tournament last year, chalk, for a reason. For a reason. Everybody talks about the death of Cinderella. You know what? That's not true. Cinderella can still come through. That's why it's Cinderella. It's got to be the Pacers. The Pacers are a Cinderella team of sorts. It's hard to have a Cinderella team in the professional league, but the Pacers are a Cinderella, the story of this season. I mean, they were the fourth seed. I mean, hell, they started out terribly, started the season horrible, and, you know, then kind of caught fire. They don't have a true superstar. That's not how they're built. So they're more of a, you know, they weren't supposed to be there. They had to go through the number one seed to start with, handled them. Then they had to take on the team that took care of the reigning champion, handled them. So they're a Cinderella team of sorts, but I just don't, you know, I don't care about that when it comes to the college tournament. The college tournament is still fun to watch. Who did not enjoy it? No one, I heard no one say that watching this last tournament was not fun.
Yeah. I do remember some people in the early rounds talking about, well, there's a lot of blowouts and this and that. But the problem that what ended up being was that you got some teams, and then you got a bunch of one seeds and two seeds playing against each other in the Elite Eight, right? And that ended up being really, really high level basketball, right? We ended up having a great national championship game between Florida and Houston that went right down to the wire, right? Like those are the two, obviously the two best teams in the country. Duke was right up there as well. And Houston had to go beat Duke. Florida had to go beat Duke, excuse me, and win that game. And it was one of those things where you got really good games late in the tournament because you were able to get the highest level teams to the Elite Eight, to the Final Four, and then play against each other. And I do remember some grumbling from people early rounds, like, oh, all these teams are so good, they can't be beaten. Well, then those teams ended up playing against one another in the later rounds, and it turned out to be really compelling basketball. So it just kind of shifting where the balance of the action is.
Yeah, and that's fine. But the gist of it was it was a good tournament. Even before once we got into the tournament, Florida started. I think I picked Florida to win it on my deal. But going into it, that's not what people were thinking. Although they had really continued to rise, you know, Auburn was the rage. There were a few other Purdue, the rage, Houston, the rage. Well, and that's why they play the games. So I still think that it was fun to watch. It will continue to be fun to watch because also how many teams, Ole Miss, for example, boy, did they rise. The SEC, gee whiz. I mean, wow. Whew, what they did last year, that had to make the Big Ten conference leaders, schools, they had to take a hard look at that. I mean, you know, basketball has always been the Big Ten's business. And they've just gotten away from it, I think. You know, no national champions since, what, 2001? 2000. Is that right?
2000 Michigan State.
2000 Michigan State. The Big Ten is not crashing the Final Four like it used to. But it's not like they haven't had good teams. I mean, there have been some good teams, but it's like the SEC is playing in a freer style, faster style sometimes. Not a lot of teams in the Big Ten play fast. Iowa did. Ironically, they're going to be probably the slowest team in the Big Ten now, which there's your irony. But Indiana, for example, though, will not be. They're going to be a team that picks up the pace, especially because of their personnel. But it's going to be interesting to see. Dusty May, I think, is very good at integrating into a newer style. Tom Izzo, I don't care what you want to do. He'll deal with it. All the players have to wear porcupine outfits. Okay, we're fine. We'll deal with it. He'll deal with it. But the Big Ten's gotta get off their ass, man. It's time. It's like, wow, they did in football, which is the more important sport when it comes to money. But you don't want to, wow, what the SEC did last year was just, I don't know that was an anomaly, because they have a lot of good coaches in that league as well. That's something where they built up is at the coaching level in the SEC, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, what is it, 14 of the 16 teams they had in that conference made the tournament last year. So it's the depth in there, which is really, really impressive. The Big Ten, it's not for a lack of talent in the Big Ten. I really do think that there's something about the style of play that the conference encourages that just doesn't work out. I don't really know how to go about fixing that. People talk about the referees. I think that's, to me, that's a little bit overblown. I know that there are games where they call too many fouls, and there are games where they call not enough fouls, so it turns into to tackle basketball, to use Jeff Rabjohn's term. But I can't imagine that that's that big of a problem where it's affecting teams in March, because I don't know. Like you talked about Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo's teams get up and down, right? Like they run. Purdue has at times gotten up and down. They got up and down last year. They're going to get up and down this year, let me tell you. Michigan got up and down last year. It's not that there are no teams in the Big Ten that have gotten out and run and had talented players, especially on the wing, and shot a bunch of threes and done the things that you need to do to be a successful basketball team. It just hasn't come together for them. Since Michigan State lost that national championship game, the Big Ten has had seven different programs, seven, make the national championship game. And they are 0-8 in those games, because Michigan went twice. 0-8 in the national championship game. But they've gotten there. Seven different teams from the Big Ten have gotten to the national championship game in the last 25 years, and they haven't been able to bring it home. Something tells me that tells me they're going to break through eventually. We're just in this very frustrating moment right now where the conference is not as deep as they would like it to be. They're not as deep as the SEC is, and they haven't broken through. And that's frustrating because, as you said, it is the Big Ten was the basketball conference for a long time, right? Like they have football with Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, and that's always going to be a big deal. But they had been the basketball conference for 5, 6, 7 years there after the ACC fell off a little bit. And now the SEC has tried to take that mantle and did a very good job of it last year. And so now, okay, you're the Big Ten. How do you go about adjusting in the next 2 or 3 years? You talked about the coaching depth. I think there's pretty good coaching depth in the Big Ten right now. They've had some teams turn over coaches in the last couple of years. Michigan State probably will turn over its coach in the next 5 to 10 years here, I would assume. I can't imagine Tom Izzo is going to be doing this in 2035. Maybe I'm wrong. But you're seeing some new blood in the coaching ranks in the Big Ten. Okay, who's going to emerge from that pack and end up being the guy to lead the conference into the future? And that to me is what's fascinating.
Yeah, and it is just it's going to be interesting to see it, those changes. They have to manifest themselves, and whatever it is. But I don't doubt that will happen. They've done it in football. Because if you look at the Big Ten in football right now, you've got teams like Indiana and Illinois that were not traditionally good that are both really good right now. Both of those teams have CFP talk around them. You've got Iowa, who is always a solid team, but rarely an elite team. They've been really good. And it's just like good enough, which has been great. It's great to have a good program. Indiana fans would trade that forever. But, man, at some point it would have to drive you mad to just not be able to at least, you know, bounce up to the top here and there. And Nebraska, boy, they have fought and fought and fought to get back to being Nebraska. Never made it. Now, I'll talk about this in a minute, the Big Ten picking the finish this year. I don't agree with it, but ESPN also, the transfer classes, they ranked the transfer class. Number one, the man, he's a magician, Rick Pitino, St. John's, brought in 7 new players, including one dude from the NAIA level. Everybody he brought in, Bryce Hopkins, big name, 17 points per game. Then another double figures. Dylan Darling, boy, that sounds like a name you're going to hear a lot. Dylan Darling, we've got our own Dylan Darling. Oh my, oh, yeah. new nickname.
Oh God.
Dylan Mitchell, 9.9 points per game at Cincinnati. I'm going to count that as double figures. And then the other guy, all in double figure scores. So, and his class ranks number one, Kentucky, number two, Michigan, number three. The rich continue to get richer. They got Morris Johnson from Illinois. Boy, that was a loss for the Illini. He only scored 7 points per game, but dude was, I think he was just a freshman and played extraordinarily well. And they brought in Yaxel Lindenborg. This dude is a scorer. Yeah, they're going to pick it up. Number four, Louisville. That's what Pat Kelsey added to what he needed with Ryan Conwell, Adrian Woolley, Isaac McNeely, all double scores, double figure scores. Number five, the rich get richer, the Florida Gators, the reigning national champion. They fill in right what they needed. Xavier Lee was at Princeton, scored 17 points a game. They get Boogie Flan from Arkansas, point guard, A.J. Brown from Ohio. They've just, they're going to be good. Number six, here's a surprise for you. The Washington Huskies, who were just god-awful in the Big Ten last year, they pull in 8 new guys. One of them is JUCO, but one of those, Bryson Tucker. That name sound familiar?
No. I'm curious for him whether there's playing time for him, because their backcourt is pretty loaded. They brought in Claude from USC. They have a lot of guys in that backcourt. I don't know how many minutes there are going to be for Bryson Tucker, at least this season. If he sticks around, there could be some in the future, because I think a lot of those are one-year guys. But to me, I think that the backcourt might be a little bit crowded for him this year.
That's a long way to go. Number seven, Indiana. Of course, they brought in, 11, what is 10. It? I don't even know how many it is now.
They have 11 guys on the roster, 10 transfers, and Trent Sisley.
All double-figure scorers, with the exception of Connor Enright, who wasn't as much a scorer last year. And Sam Alexis, who had a backup role at Florida. But the rest of them are all double-figure scorers. Lamar Wilkerson, the shooter. And Reed Bailey, the big guy. Nick Dorn. Tucker DeVries. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits into this role. If he is 100% healthy. That there are a couple of guys that Indiana needs to have healthy. So you wonder during this summer, are they going full bore yet? All of them, are they 100% right now? What is the state of that? Because that's going to be very important. Indiana is not going to have a ton of depth next year. That's where they will at certain spots. They're not going to have any depth down low. And between the guys, especially, I don't even know who's really going to play the five. You know, I don't know that. I guess it'll be Reed Bailey, but you've got Josh Harris and
Sam Alexis as well.
Sam Alexis, yeah, who will be mining in that area. So, but Josh Harris and Sam Alexis are going to be very active guys. Very careful about foul trouble. So it'll be interesting to see, but maybe the speed that Indiana puts on is more than what the other teams can handle. Hey, I do have to take a quick break, man. I rambled on much too long. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette with us. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette with us as well. Appreciate you joining us. Indiana football, man, you want to talk about busy. They have been pulling in recruits. The spring has been very well. And you can tell, while these are not 4- and 5-star guys, these are really good 3-star guys. These are Kurt Cignetti-type guys. Not to say that Indiana wouldn't take or doesn't want some 5-star guys. I think Kurt Cignetti may be more comfortable in that 3-4-star area where they can develop these guys.
Yeah, and now the question is, okay, over the next couple of years here, can you retain these guys, right? Because they did a really good job this offseason of retaining key guys, guys they wanted, the guys they've developed, guys they wanted to keep. They didn't lose anyone that was going to be a starter to the portal, which I think was really important for them. They obviously, that's the thing that happens to a lot of programs, and didn't happen to Indiana this offseason. So now the question is, you get these guys in your program, you get them for a year or two, can you get them to stick around? I think that's going to be huge. And obviously, Kurt Cignetti wants to be able to develop these guys, and that's what he's done throughout his career. And now in this era, you're at a Big Ten school. Can you maintain your depth over the course of several years? Can you get a guy and have him be a redshirt as a freshman, be a backup as a sophomore, and be a starter as a junior? Can you do that in this era? Kurt Cignetti obviously thinks he can, and that he's bringing in guys that he believes will stick around and be part of his process over several years. And so now we'll see over the next several years if that's going to happen. It's going to be a multi-year process to see if his recruiting strategy bears fruit. And I think there will be some high-end guys eventually as well. I do think they are, to some extent, big game hunting over the next couple of classes here. They are not going to just settle for 3- and 4-star guys. They're going to take some big swings and see what they can connect with. But I do think if for the bulk of your class, for the foundation of your class, getting these guys that are 3- and 4-stars that are going to stick around for a couple of years, that's the goal. And I think personally, he believes he can do that with this roster.
Yeah, I think it's going to take another season like last year for guys that are outside of the area, outside of Indiana, not around, to understand, oh, that's for real. Oh, that program's for real. You know, they go 9-3, 10-2 this year, they're in. And then that's when you really start to get the looks. But like right now, a 4-star quarterback from California, Luke Fahey, just took an official visit and apparently loved a great article in there in the Hoosier.com right now that you can check out if you're a subscriber. But he talks about his visit and how much he liked it. And that's what we're talking about. I think Indiana is also going to become a good quarterback school. because of the offense, because of the success last year. Look what Curtis Rourke was able to do on a damn bum knee last year with this offense. Now, I think that Fernando Mendoza will take that to another level this year because of his mobility. And people are going, the players are going to see that. These guys are going to see, these recruits are going to see that. And that's going to start to solidify. Just like national pundits, you know, they don't have Indiana. The ESPN picked the order of the Big Ten finish. And they have Indiana 8th, which just I'm befuddled by because they're behind Washington and Nebraska. And I'm like, really? So they're not getting the respect I think they deserve there. They're going to go with the Big Four, of course, you know, at the top, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, and USC. Now, but USC was horrible last year. So I think Indiana deserved to be in that fifth spot. Are they the fifth best team right now or fourth? I don't know. How good is Michigan really going to be? How good is Oregon really going to be? They have to, you know, they lost their quarterback. So it's going to be interesting to see someone commented yesterday because our guest that's coming on tomorrow, is it Friday? I can't remember. I think it's tomorrow from one of the national writers, Nick Costco, that he put this ESPN thing out, but that, you know, he said, I think Indiana goes 9-3, and one of the fans took exception to that. I'm like, dude, you've got a national guy saying picking Indiana to go 9-3 with the schedule they have. I think that that is complete respect. That's a little more respect than Vegas. Vegas is saying 8.5, which that's also respect. Vegas has Indiana at 8.5 wins. That's a dude. That is. That puts Indiana in a class where they've only been, what, six times in the program's history? Won that many games in a season? So yeah. Then the outside narrative is starting to pick up, but it's in this day and age, it takes more than just one day. So what's up next for you, brother?
Yeah, I have coming up in the next couple of weeks here, I will be putting together roster resets for basically all of the teams that I cover, at least tangentially. So I have IU basketball, Purdue football, IU football, Notre Dame football. I'm basically saying, okay, you now have a roster for next season. What does that look like? And kind of breaking down each roster so you can kind of get an idea of who's where now, because obviously in the era of the transfer portal, it's hard to keep track. So I will have a series of those coming out here over the next couple of weeks. So very excited for that, letting everyone know as we go into the season again, here's who's playing where. Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to you always, brother. Appreciate you. Enjoy your day, and we'll see you next week. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Make sure you go visit Hard Truth if you get the opportunity there in Nashville, Indiana. Awesome place to go to. All kinds of tours you can go on, distillery tours, the restaurant, music, outdoor entertainment. You can stay in the overnight cabins that they have, for gosh sakes. But and, of course, the wonderful products. I've got to light my candles in the next break, get those lit again. I don't know if you can see them when the lights are on, so there's that. But, yeah, Hard Truth is they have a bourbon and barbecue festival coming up in June. I think that is this month, the June 21st and 2nd, maybe, I think. I'll have to double check that. But, man, I'm definitely going to be hitting that up as long as it fits into the schedule because so many things are happening coming up. Hey, hit the like button if you're on social media. We've got more coming on the other side from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company. Close on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. I'm glad to be here. No matter where or how you're listening on one of our great radio affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call. And up in the region, on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan in Fort Wayne. Keep it locked where you already got it. You're in the right place throughout the day. And if you're following along on social media as well, hit that like button and subscribe as well while you're at it. Might as well. Nothing else to do. Or give me a follow on Twitter, at Jim Coyle ISB. You can do that as well. Hope everybody is doing well. Kyle Nedrip set to join us here in a second. Kyle, just let me know when you're ready to go. There we go. I can hear you, my friend. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Jim?
Cannot complain, man. Cannot complain. If I was any better, I would be Kyle Nedrip. Oh, how about those Tigers, baby?
44-24.
Got to give you a chance to crow.
44-24. Feeling good and not sure.
That's remarkable for what we for the last couple of seasons when you're on. It was like you weren't quite in the Rick Bozich category.
Oh, no.
But with his White Sox. But man, Detroit. I don't know. Were they expected to be the team that they are this year?
Well, they finished really on fire last year, made the playoffs, beat the Astros, and then lost to Cleveland in the ALDS in a really hard-fought series. And I think with everybody, you know, pretty much everybody coming back, and Cleveland had everybody too, and I don't count them out by any means. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're 44-24 good, but their pitching is excellent. Tarik Skubal is unbelievable. Won the Cy Young last year. He's been even better this year. So every fifth day, you've got the best pitcher in baseball, basically holding teams to one or two or zero runs. So, yeah, and their pitching's really good. Their lineup is not – I wouldn't say the hitting is outstanding, but it's been a lot better. So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely a playoff team. I don't know if they're a 110-win team like they're kind of doing right now, but they're very good.
Best record in all of baseball, man, without a question. And the biggest lead of anybody in baseball with an 8-game lead over Minnesota, 9 over Cleveland. That's about double what everybody else has. So congratulations. The rally cap has served you well, my friend.
Well, keep an eye on Cleveland. That gap will close, I'm sure. And they've struggled to beat. You know, Cleveland's kind of got – even this year they – you know, Cleveland beat them 3 out of 4 in Detroit, and that was kind of disappointing. But yeah, I mean, other than that, they really have – they just keep winning series like 2 out of 3, and then it kind of stacks up when you're able to do that.
The top 100 coming up, and lots of names playing another. Charlie Hughes, I guess that's another week away. Nothing going on this weekend I'm aware of, right?
No, it was a busy. Well, I went out last night, a little bit of a Tuesday night league. Nothing really to, saw a couple local teams. But yeah, last week.
I thought you laced them up, man. I thought you got out there on the hardwood.
That's what my wife said when I was going out to. She's like, "Are you playing?" I was like, "No, no. When's the last time I played?" But yeah, I mean, last week was kind of the big week for Indian All Stars. So I think saw five nights of games and, ending with the seniors versus Kentucky, and was cool to see those guys kind of give Kentucky a whooping and finish on a high note. And the girls lost both games. Kentucky had a really good girls team. I was kind of surprised they lost both games, though. It was a little disappointing for the girls, but the boys got the sweep. You know, as normal, it was a pretty tough game down in Kentucky for the boys. Malachi Moreno really. You know, he's tough in there. He's 7 foot, you know, what is he, 7'1"? You know, had a lot of, you know, 22 points, I think, 16 rebounds, something like that. But they were able to kind of get it going. Michael Cooper was kind of, I thought he was kind of the big, you know, the Jeffersonville guard who's going to Wright State. He had a stretch there where he got 3 threes in a row that kind of opened up the gap and allowed Indiana to breathe a little easier. So, yeah, it's always tough. You know, I don't know why that is. You go down there to play in Lexington, and it's not like it's a, you know, it's at the, now it's at Lexington Catholic High School. But yeah, they got the win, came back home and played a lot better. And it's always fun to see those guys be able to end on a high note like that.
they have to have some sort of awe when, you know, they're playing in a damn high school there on their side, and then they come to Indiana and they're playing at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, home of the team playing in the NBA Finals right now.
Yeah, it's really weird to that point, like walking out that night, you know, everybody's gone and I'm walking to the elevator after filing my story on Saturday night, and I walk by the media room and the NBA Finals backdrop thing, you know, that they show at the press conferences is on the backdrop. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're 3 days away from the Pacers playing game three of the NBA Finals here. You know, how crazy is that? And, you know, I'll be able to go up there tonight. That'd be a heck of a atmosphere and a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. Never covered NBA Finals before, so that'll be a blast too. But yeah,
you're covering that.
Yeah, I've been helping. I'm doing all the home games, helping Dustin, our beat writer for the Pacers.
Dustin's on with the seats Monday. Now wait a minute, Zach covered for him in Oklahoma City. Now you're covering for him. There's something going on here he's not telling me about. Man, he's laying low. He's handing off the biggest time of the year.
Well, I'm not filling in for him. He'll be there tonight. I'm kind of his like, hey, what do you need me to do? And I, you know, normally what I do, I end up going in the locker room while he's at the press conferences, like post game. So I talk to the players who don't go to the podium, and end up writing a sidebar or two, you know, depending on wrote, you know, Thomas Bryant when he had that big game to close out the Knicks, you know, wrote something on him. And usually it's like an Andrew Nembhard or Aaron Nesmith, TJ McConnell / Obi Toppin, you know, whoever kind of steps up from that group is normally what I end up writing. So, but yeah, it's been a blast. I mean, I normally help out when the Pacers make the playoffs. It's been a lot of times in the time I've been here, it hasn't been, you know, they've been out pretty quickly until last year. And then last year they made their run. Of course, and Paul George and those guys were playing. They made it pretty deep in the Eastern Conference a couple times, but it's been pretty sparse up until last year, and it's been fun to get back in it, especially this year. I mean, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. It's just an electric time as the Pacers have an opportunity to win an NBA championship, a legitimate chance here. We'll see. Hey, coming up, the team camps down in Bloomington this Saturday. What a lineup, man. If you look at that, first of all, what jumped off the page at me, a rematch between Fishers and Jeffersonville.
Well, a lot of different faces will be in.
Yeah.
It won't be exactly the same, I'll say that. Now, you will have Jason Gardner, which I'm sure is going to be a draw. You know, Kai McGrew, who's playing with Fishers, and Cooper Zachary. They had those three. You know, McGrew came over from Lawrence North, but, you know, Zachary and Gardner had been there. You know, so they got their backcourt returning. And if everything goes, you know, with McGrew's eligibility in his transfer situation, then they're going to be pretty tough still. That senior class was really good, really good, really experienced, you know, just a lot of good pieces there. So, yeah, that may not be the same, quite the same game as it was a few months ago.
But a lot of teams in this, Bloomington North, South, Evansville Wrights, teams from all over. They're Bedford, North Lawrence, of course, but Bloomington Central Catholic of Illinois. I know Christian Academy of Louisville. Trying to look at some others. Butler, Kentucky playing in this. Louisville Ballard, a former powerhouse there in Louisville.
Is also Pike in that one, or is Pike in a different
one? Pike must be in a different one because they have – but Crispus Attucks is. So okay. That's something – but I guess they don't have the big man. I keep forgetting that the season's over.
Right, yeah.
I'm still in last season mode, not moving forward yet.
These teams will look different. Attucks is definitely rebuilding, you know. Jeffersonville definitely rebuilding. You'll have a lot of teams that will look, you know, quite a bit different. But yeah, I mean, some of those teams for their rebuilding, it's a little different than other. You know, they won't drop off the map, but you know, just a new batch of people to learn as we graduate this 25 class.
Culver Academy, another team there that's going to be down at this. Gary Lighthouse, is that? I'm assuming from Gary, Indiana. I'm not familiar with that school.
Yeah, they've been around for a little while. I don't know what they've got. Gary 21st Century's kind of been the team up there, and they should be. They should be out.
Where do these names come from? It used to be Gary Washington, Gary Roosevelt. Now it's what, 21st Century? What do we got? All these new modern age changes.
My question is, do they change their name here in about 75 years? To do you have to change your name when you go out of the 21st century, or how does that work? Ooh. That's something our grandkids will have to figure out.
That is going to be a little odd. Yeah, we'll have to look forward to that. But
we can talk about that in 75 years.
Yeah, I hope we are. that'll be a fun show. What do these teams get out of this? I mean, first of all, it's an amazing thing is they're playing in Cook Hall and then also playing in Assembly Hall. That's got to be, I don't care who you are, it's got to be a hell of a thrill.
Yeah, it is. I've gone to it a few times, and I guess like when they used to have the Adidas May Classic there too, that was always fun to watch. You know, they'd have some of the games in the Assembly Hall main floor, and then some would be in the Cook Hall, and then, you know, elsewhere throughout Bloomington on different occasions. But yeah, it's a neat thing for those kids to be able to play there and, you know, kind of just be on campus. You know, it feels like a bigger, definitely bigger than playing just like in a weeknight league or whatever. Purdue has one Friday. I know they've had one already. So that's what these teams are doing a lot is having team camps. And a lot of times, obviously, it's the, you know, some of those main players on good teams that are the highlight, that they want to get those kids on campus and show them around. But then also just to kind of, you know, maintain good relationships with the coaches in the high school realm. And I'm sure for Coach DeVries there at IU, you know, you're kind of making initial, conversations with coaches and initial, you know, just sort of maintaining relationships that or getting those relationships started that you may not have, you know, you're just meeting them in person for the first time or whatnot. So, but yeah, it's a good chance to kind of get those relationships started. And for the kids, definitely just to highlight, you know, some of these kids may not play in college even or whatever. And you get a chance to say, hey, I played at Assembly Hall. That's pretty unique. Not everybody gets to do that.
No, they do not. And there's plenty of other things going on around the state right now. We just finished up with the All-Star game. They've got these summer matchups going on. Daggone, I saw Floyd Central got beat to go to state in softball, man. My Highlanders couldn't get it done. What's up next for you?
Yeah, I was working on a couple different things, just trying to get some stuff done before my oldest son's graduating, and so we've got a lot of that going on. But yeah, golf, covered golf this week. More coming on that. And also starting with some football stuff too. And also on Friday morning, I've mentioned a project that we're going to be kicking off to you a few times to actually get started on Friday. And then again, in full force, I guess you'd say, on Monday. So looking forward to
give us a hint. Can you give us a hint?
It's on old gyms around the state of Indiana. So,
well, no one, you don't know anything about old gyms around Indiana.
Well, that's part of the kickoff story that I wrote yesterday or a couple days ago is kind of about that. You know, I went around, you know, probably now been 16, 17 years ago, kind of all over the state, different places for a project back then that turned into a book. And now kind of revisiting that idea. And a lot of those places are gone. You know, some of them are gone. Some of them are still around. A lot of the people I talk to as I go through the book have passed away, unfortunately. So kind of the idea here is to get these, you know, what we did is get a lot of the people who played in these places in the places where they played and sit down and talk to them on video and also writing stories about them. So, but yeah, that's, you know, that's the gist of it, basically. Yeah, there's really no secret. I don't know why I was, you know, but I didn't, you know, in previous weeks, I wanted to make sure we were to the point where it was going to run. But yeah, that'll start out on Friday and continue Monday and throughout the summer, actually. So should be, we have most of it, I'd say 60, 70% of it done, or probably more than that, 70, 80% of it done, and wrapping up some loose ends. So
make sure you look for that at the Indy Star with Kyle Ninrip and give him a follow. Appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. Thank you, Jim.
We'll see Kyle again next week. More coming up with the great Rick Bozich when we return from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Wednesday. I should start calling it Rick Bozich Day. Rick Bozich from WDRB.com joins us now from the throne. How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's starting to be a steamy Wednesday morning in Louisville. Went out and took Ruby for about a 1 mile walk because I didn't want her to get overheated. She can't take off the winter coat and put shorts on like I can. And now got to do a few other things and write a story and on my way.
Just finished up with Kyle Nedrip, who was proudly wearing his Detroit Tigers hat. Mentioned that he didn't have to dwell in his coffee or cry in his coffee more like a certain other friend of ours did. And he's like, he's all puffed up. He's got his old beat up Tigers hat on, man. But they're rolling. Best record in baseball.
You know, they played the White Sox last week and they only won two of the games. So I'm not sure they're better than the White Sox.
Hey, there you go. That could have gone either way. Could have gone either way.
It's baseball city here, baby. Kentucky's.
I was getting ready to say, speaking of baseball, man,
two teams going to the College World Series.
Murray State, that was so fun watching that last game down at Duke. I mean, they were down 1-0 and then come back. And then to win that last game, man, they gritted it out. They worried me when they left, when they stranded the bases with I was like, man, you needed to score there. All you had to do was get the bat on the ball at one point. A fly ball, a ground ball scored another run, and they just couldn't get that. And I'm like, and then first thing up, Duke, oh, solo homer, cut that two-run lead in half. And I'm like, oh, man, here we go. And then I've never seen this. You see in basketball and games, the people think they're over, but it's not over. I've never seen a complete dog pile celebration and then have to unwrap all of that, go back out. And the pitcher of all guys, he's got to come back from that because, you know, he's in that dog pile. He's got to come back mentally and face his hitter, which he promptly gets to ground out to first base. But yeah, that was wild, but they got to celebrate twice.
Yeah. And it was great to watch because stories like that are why we enjoy sports.
That's what I said the whole time. I said, this is just a great story.
Nobody thought they'd be there. Nobody thought they'd make the NCAA tournament. They were the 4 seed. They had to go to Ole Miss and survive. Ole Miss was down there. Western Kentucky was down there, and somebody else that was better than them was down there. They survived that. They go to Duke and win. Now they're going to Omaha. Nobody's going to think they can win in Omaha, you know, and this will be something all those dudes will remember for the rest of their lives. I'm sure none of them were recruited by SEC schools or ACC schools. And it's like I said, this is why we watch sports, to see stories like this. And especially in today's day and age when it's so much driven by money and NIL and all that stuff, these dudes are just out there playing baseball. And a lot of them, I'm sure, are paying for some of it out of their own pocket. Because in baseball, you only get like 11.7 scholarships or whatever. And they cut those up and guys get a quarter of a scholarship or a half of a scholarship. And your parents have to pay the rest of the fees. So good for them. I hope they do well in Omaha.
Absolutely. And it's fun. I mean, the College World Series is always a blast. And this year, it's not the SEC party. What do they have? Two teams?
And they play each other the first game. So, yeah. Arkansas is probably the favorite. LSU is probably the second choice, I would think. It'd be either LSU or Coastal Carolina. So, you know, Louisville's on the other side of the bracket from the SEC teams. They open on Friday night against Oregon State, which is a very good program, but hard to judge this year because with the Pac-12 disintegrating, they played as an independent this year. So they're highly rated, but you know how it is in baseball, man. If you pitch a good game in the first game, you set yourself up. You don't want to be in the loser's bracket where you have to win four times. You got to win four games to get through the loser's bracket. If you stay in the winner's bracket, you only have to win three, and you can protect your pitching staff better.
Yeah, and man, you don't want to have to do what like Murray State did down in Durham, but no. Come back. And they did it at Duke, not just on the road, but at Duke. So really, really impressive. And I mean, it's Duke. I mean, Duke has one of, if not the best athletics programs in the country. When you talk, I was looking at a thing somebody put out yesterday, and I'm like, ooh, they listed Duke. I'm like, damn. So that's beyond impressive. I mean, I didn't Google how many students are at. I think I did Google. It's like, what do they have, 1,500 students or something like that?
I'm not even sure. But, yeah, Duke has got money. They're good in men's tennis. They're good in field hockey. They're good in lacrosse.
They're good in pool. Yeah, pool. I'm talking
everything about football.
There you go. Well, they keep losing their coaches. But, yeah, congratulations. It'll be fun. I can't wait. Does that get underway, what, tomorrow? Or when's that get underway?
Friday. Friday's the first two Friday. Teams. Arizona and Coastal Carolina and Louisville, Oregon State. Then the other side is Arkansas, LSU, and I don't even know who Murray State plays. Who do they play? I got to look it up.
Brad says he saw Murray State head coach's salary is $68,000 a year. Duke's head coach's salary, $800,000 a year.
Of course it is. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's a great story. And what I hope it doesn't end up this way. It probably will end up this way after the season's over. Somebody's going to hire him and he'll be gone.
Let me tell you, that Duke's got serious money because
Murray plays UCLA.
I'm going to say that's substantially high for a baseball coach that's not at an SEC school or
I mean, Louisville's coach makes over $1 million. So,
well, he has had a lot of success over a sustained time, and they're going back to the freaking College World Series. So, how many times have they been under him?
Six. This will be their sixth one. They've never made it to the final. You know how it works. It's two 4-team double elimination pods, and then the two teams that win those pods play a best 2 out of 3 series. They've never made it to the final series. But that happens all the time. Vanderbilt, I tell people this story. Vanderbilt's been there probably as many times as Louisville, and the year they finally won, it wasn't really their best team. It wasn't Sonny Gray or David Price or some of those real dudes they've had there. It was a different team. It might have been the Walker Buehler, Carson Fulmer team. I think it was. But, you know, it's a fun event. I went in 2007 with Louisville the first time they went. And then I went in, I get my years mixed up. It was either 2013, Indiana and Louisville went. And they were actually in the same bracket and they played, I think. It was the Schwarber, Sam Travis team. And that was fun.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day that I don't know if they have it marked, but people know exactly where the spot is where Schwarbs hit the ball out down there at Louisville's baseball park.
I think I was there that night.
Go over the railroad tracks that are behind
it? It went near the railroad tracks. The legend has grown through the years. But yeah, he's done it. He's done it.
He certainly has. College basketball, man, we're in the coaches are out on the trail looking at recruits. I know Indiana's coaching staff will be out upcoming soon. There's the Charlie Hughes going up. There's all kinds of things that are happening down in South Carolina, but Indiana coaches will be out, Louisville coaches. But Louisville has done, and Kentucky have done a phenomenal job replenishing. The ESPN had the rankings of the portal class or transfer classes, all three, Louisville, Kentucky, and Indiana, all in their top 10.
Yeah. You know, Louisville was the most aggressive. They got three really good guards right off the bat. Kentucky was on it next because their staff was in place, and Darren DeVries has done a good job. He had to get the most players. Obviously, what do they have, 9 or 10 out of the portal? I think it might be 10 because they only have one other guy, Sisley, right? Until they know about Goody and Leal, but it's good to see them getting recognition, and we'll see more about. It looks like moving forward, he is interested in getting some good high school players because they've offered a lot of guys. So this year will be mainly a portal team, and we'll see how he puts it together. And then moving forward, I expect he'll be like a lot of good teams. You'll have 4, 5, 6 homegrown, developed guys, and you'll supplement where you need with portal guys.
Now, which coach were you talking about there?
DeVries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as soon as they got the roster filled, they just hit the ground running. And the biggest advantage he has is the staff that he has, in my opinion, because they can go in different directions and be very successful. Drew Adams and Rod Clark and Nick Norton. He's got just
Kenny Johnson.
I keep forgetting him. Yeah. How do you forget him? But just that is he's got a great staff. He really did. He put together as good a staff. He might have put together a better staff than he did his first roster. And I'm not poo pooing his roster. His staff is really good.
I agree. And people were getting nervous there because, in the beginning, a couple of those dudes who it was reported that they were going after from Alabama and Texas Tech didn't come. So he just was patient. And Kenny Johnson is a terrific hire. We saw him work at Louisville. We saw him work at Indiana. I mean, at Louisville, he's the guy that got Donovan Mitchell here. He's got a track record of players building relationships with players that he maintains. Rod Clark did a great job getting guys to Tennessee, and his geographical footprint is more south and the western side of the Midwest. Kenny Johnson is East Coast, and Drew Adams, I'm sure, will be the guy in the state of Indiana. And I like that plan. I agree with you. I think it's a good plan and a good staff.
And they're already – the offers that they have put out, you can tell that they are – establishing relationships with these guys, and that is such an important key. That's what we've seen Indiana football landing several commitments here recently, and all of them are talking about the most recent one that it felt like home, and just this, that, and the other, and how comfortable they are with the coaching staff. And I know everybody says that you have to have the right fit, but that is being provided now. And it kind of wasn't there the last 4 years, last 8 years, to be honest with you. It just wasn't there. It was under Archie Miller, he had no relationship with the players. He had no relationship with anybody. Maybe with himself is the only person he had a relationship with. I'm not sure. But
I'll defend Archie on this, though. He did get Trace Jackson Davis, and he did get Romeo Langford. So, he did go out hard.
He got Romeo because he convinced him that he was so good that he needed to come out of high school a year early, which was very detrimental.
No, that wasn't Romeo. That was Christian Lander. That wasn't Romeo. Romeo played his entire year. I understand what you're saying. I think,
but he got Romeo, and I'll say that he got Romeo Langford because Rick Pitino got fired at Louisville.
But he still got him. He got him over Kansas, and he got him from Vanderbilt. Mike Woodson had all the advantages in the world, and he didn't get Braylon Mullins. Rick Pitino wasn't at Louisville then. Archie Miller is here. Mike Woodson's here. I mean, what Mike Woodson did deserves the criticism because what happened last year when they didn't get Harrelson or Mullins and a couple of other guys for the reasons that they didn't get him, which is just not working at it hard enough and not developing relationships. Or Singleton's another one that they whiffed on in terms of whether they didn't think he was good enough or whatever it was. Miller and Ostrom, at least they got Demezi Anderson, didn't turn out to be a good enough player. They got him. They got Finnessy. They got Langford. They got Trace Jackson Davis. They did get guys. They just didn't develop them. They didn't get enough of them.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be completely different now. Darren DeVries is going to not only get guys, but he's going to develop them. They're going to have to, because I think that's the type of style Indiana is going to play and to run. Now, I don't think they're going to be necessarily personneled like they are this year going forward. They've already, as everyone saw first on the Hoosier.com, they're hosting a 7'4" Italian coming up. Everybody's getting Eastern European, so Indiana says, hey, we'll get a little Italiano. But he's also visiting Purdue and Matt Painter.
Right. It's going to be the next Zach Edey or whoever, Matt Harms or whoever else.
But there has never been a big that I can recall that visited, I'm not going to say ever, not in recent memory, that visited both schools, that both schools were going after. There's been other guys.
You don't count Kaufman Redden?
No, because I don't consider him a big, really. But he's the closest thing. But I mean, he's playing a big right now for them, but he's really a stretch four. But
it's nice to see him get involved with international players. And they're getting involved with top 25 guys. They're getting involved in the state of Indiana. I mean, you got to be involved in a lot of different areas. You got to cast a wide enough net. The problem with the last administration was that 1 year, I'm going back 2 years, when they went after Boogie Fland, Liam McNeely, and Derek Queen, and look good. Oh, he's going to go to Kentucky. Oh, he's going to go to Maryland. Oh, he's going to come to Indiana. No, hold on. He's going to go to UConn. They put all their effort into three guys. They put all their energy into three guys, and they got none of them. You can't do that. It's a tremendous waste of money in terms of recruiting, and B, it puts you – it's a bad look perception wise. And thirdly, it's a terrible way to build a roster. And, you know, the biggest thing I'll say is these guys are go-getters. And I think the last staff had some go-getters, but when the head coach isn't a go-getter, you ain't getting what you're supposed to get.
And not only that, I did not hear anything about relationships with, when you hear about these players, I can sit here and read them off from the Hoosier.com left and right, from basketball and football, where recruits are talking about, oh, how great it was, this and that and the other thing. They would say nice things, but they're going to say nice things. What are they going to say? It was terrible. He doesn't talk up or whatever. I think people are just going to say nice things out of this obligation. When you're talking to a media person, you're not going to slam somebody on a visit. So it's hard to ever really get the truth.
I'm going to say two things. One is, look at football. In the last week, Cignetti, when he came here, said they were going to recruit mostly in the geographical area. They've gotten a lineman out of Wisconsin. They've gotten a receiver out of East St. Louis, Illinois, and they've got a linebacker yesterday out of Ohio. So he's going all around the area and getting players. Plus, he's gotten a lot of kids from in the state. And there's not anybody saying, well, the assistant coaches are doing a great job, but Cignetti's not getting in there closing the deal. He is front and center in the recruitment. Every time one of those kids visits, there's a picture taken of him with Cignetti in Cignetti's office, and they all walk away from there saying, man, Coach Cignetti, he's a special coach. He's got energy. He wants to win at Indiana. We didn't see that from Mike Woodson. And the thing that I've said before, and I'll say it one last time, the key clue that all of us in the media missed was an introductory press conference, and he said, if Scott Dolson wants to interview Mike Woodson, he's going to get in the plane and fly to see Mike Woodson. That's his mentality. You come see me. I'm the king of the hill. I'm not going to fly to Indiana for an interview. You come here and see me. And that's how he treated recruiting, and that's why he didn't get guys.
I agree, and I know specific stories where he was out recruited, but it doesn't matter. Hell, some of them are obvious. I mean, when you don't get Braylon Mullins, that was a true loss because you let him go to UConn. And
where were they at on Trey Singleton? They didn't think he was good enough.
Oh no! I mean, obviously, they didn't, or they would have offered him, and they should have. This is a kid that should be playing at Indiana. He's a Southern Indiana kid, but he's good. He's good enough. He's got another kid that's going to be playing against Indiana.
They didn't even try, right? I mean, they didn't even try to get him, right?
No, and it's when you, now that you've got a new regime in there, and even though his coach is a former Indiana player who is developing a relationship with Darren, he met him at the state finals. Darren saw him saw Sharon win a state championship. Saw Trey Singleton win. Saw him lead Jeffersonville to a state championship.
Right.
So I'm sure he wished they had him. I think that Trey Singleton probably felt obligated to keep his commitment.
Sure.
And
that shows some character.
But it's not to say that you don't see him in an Indiana uniform.
Exactly.
You might see Braylon Mullins in an Indiana uniform.
You never know. Yeah, you might. You might see Jalen Harrelson. You don't know.
That's how it has gone. So, yeah, we'll look forward to all that. Terry asking, how does NIL work with foreign players? Student visas limit your income, right? Well, when I've looked it up, there are multiple ways around this. They can somehow run it through their home country. There are different types of, I think there's a visa for athletes. There are like three or four different ways around this. And that is why I talked about this a week or so ago. I don't remember his name, but he's the agent for Jokovic, who had never talked to a potential college player ever. This year, he said he will sign between 50 and 75 college players to represent, just because of the money now that are coming over. So, and these are guys he's bringing in. He's the guy. So can you imagine? That dude is making money hand over fist, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question for Brett Underwood, because he obviously has figured out how to do it. He's got five guys coming from Eastern Europe. There's got to be a way to do it. What it is, I don't know. But I know Louisville's got a guy coming from Germany and another guy, I think, coming from Croatia. Kentucky's got a guy coming from either Croatia or Slovenia or Bosnia. I don't know what it is. So if those schools are all getting foreign players, it can be done. You can find a way to do it. What the actual, dots you have to connect, I'm not sure, but it can be done.
Absolutely, and we'll look forward to that. Let's see. Is it time to – no, we've got more to go. So Louisville, Kentucky, Indiana all make the top 10 for ESPN's transfer list, which doesn't really mean anything because everybody's got to get on the floor. Everybody has to play.
Yeah, it's a good conversation piece.
Absolutely. But amongst those in that mix, Florida. Florida, the rich get richer. Michigan was in that list. So, man, does Florida have a shot to win back-to-back titles? I'm going to say that UCLA is the only team to win back-to-back titles twice. I know they had a longer string, but I don't know if they ever won back-to-back titles that were broken up.
They won in 64 and 65. Then they lost. Then they won seven in a row. So, yeah, they have done it twice.
Yeah, and then some. And then some. And then some.
Yeah. So, I'd say the odds are against them. I mean, it's hard to do once, much less twice. You gotta stay. What's the right word? You gotta stay motivated. You gotta stay healthy. You gotta get good draws. They lost their backcourt. I'm pretty sure one guy was seen. Clayton is gone, and I think the guy who transfers from FAU is gone. So it's hard to replace guards. But they did get. Guess who they have? They have Boogie Fland.
Man, that dude's been everywhere.
Yeah,
he's been everywhere, man. He's been everywhere. Hey, we'll take a quick break. The great Rick Bozich from WDRB.com is with us. Make sure you're giving him a follow. And we'll be back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Jim Coyle with you as always, and Rick Bozich from WDRB.com as well. Rick, the House settlement has been approved. It comes in on July 1st, and people still have tons of questions about it. None of us understand everything, and I know the fans don't understand everything. As I even try to explain, know that I am not coming from a point where I think I know it all, because I don't. I'm learning just like you are. I have the basics down that most Power Four schools are going to get about 20.5 million in the first year, and that will continue to increase year over year. But then you've got conferences like the Big East, who don't have football programs. Is that going to give them an advantage in basketball?
I've read that it is. I'm not sure if I understand it enough to say that I'm confident about that, but I've read from different people that are more knowledgeable than me that it will give them one. It was one of the reasons, in fact, behind Kevin Willard's decision to leave Maryland to go to Villanova, that he knows they didn't have to worry about resources being diverted towards football. So, yeah, I think it will give the Big East a bit of an advantage. But the part I don't understand about it is, I know that that's the money that comes from the school, but players can still get additional money from NIL.
NIL is completely separate, has nothing to do with rev share. Now, the difference is, now for NIL, it has to be approved by a clearinghouse, anything over $600. And now, and there is a quote unquote czar that will be overseeing that for the Power Four conferences, Brian Seely. He's a high-ranking executive, well, he was, at Major League Baseball, former assistant U.S. attorney who was officially hired by the Power Conferences to lead their newly formed college sports enforcement body. They have their own NCAA. Football is slowly moving away from the NCAA in that sense.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how they're going to enforce that, though. I mean, the NCAA, in terms of investigating and enforcing rules, really isn't. It's like, you know.
Well, I will say this.
For the most part.
The fact that they have a former U.S. attorney and someone dealt in the professional leagues, that doesn't strike me as, when I think of that and I think of Mark Emmert, two things are not the same.
Yeah, it's true. But are they going to invest the money and the manpower into having the other people who work under him who are going to be able to actually look at the schools – numbers and make sure that they add up.
He's one of the he led investigations into salary cap circumvention when in Major League Baseball, so he's used to doing that kind of stuff.
Okay. And I hope so. I hope that's right.
It appears that they are committed to doing this. The new enforcement terms declare that any third party NIL deals worth $600 or more must go into the clearinghouse database. The idea is that the clearinghouse, dubbed NIL Go, and managed by the accounting firm of Deloitte & Touche, who you also win an Oscar if you get your deal approved.
They do the Heisman, too.
They do. Well, what don't they do? They do everything for except for my taxes, I think. The return of the big man NIL clearinghouse could revive paying college athletes under the table. Stuart Mandel writes about it and says that the unlikelihood to deliver the level playing field many have long fantasized about seeing. Well, I don't think it would be a level playing field, because NIL can still be gigantic for Texas. You know, they've already said it's a $40 or $50 million payroll. And somebody said, this is what it's going to be. Football programs are going to cost you up to $40 to $50 million a year. The elite ones. And we heard Kirk Cignetti at Huber's tell the audience, hey, if you want to be good in football, you have to be great in NIL. And that's the fact of the matter now. And that's a hard sell to fans at a school that, no matter what last year was like, it's still a basketball school. People will love and enjoy this season. I can't wait to cover it, but it will take many seasons of that for this not to be a basketball school. It's a basketball state. Unless Indiana continues to just toil in anonymity in basketball, I can't see that changeover happening, but it's a hard sell. But it's also something that success breeds success.
I agree. I mean, it's changed a little bit, but it's going to take a long time to change it dramatically, because just look at the demand for Indiana basketball fans have gotten very little return on their investment for over 20 years, and they're still loyal and they're still driven to show up and they're still willing to contribute to the program. And it took winning to get people really on board in football. And if they don't, if they go through a down period, you wonder whether people are going to stay into it. Cignetti obviously doesn't plan to go through a down period, but you know, it's harder, in my opinion, to stay good in football in the Big Ten than it is in basketball, because Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan have tremendous built-in advantages of tradition and revenue and facilities and stadium size and TV, you know, appearances and all those different things. Guys going to the NFL. I mean, it's going to take a while for Indiana to even start digging into that.
Yeah, and they've done a good job trying to. And some people, I saw some comments on some boards the other day where some people said, was he serious? Referring to Kurt Cignetti's comment down at Huber's that he wanted to bring in a few more players, but we hired Darren and he had a whole damn roster to fill. So, but
I think there was a little truth to that sentence. I don't think it was, I think there was some truth to it.
And, well, some people commented and said, well, I think there may be some half-truth to it. But, you know, that has never been – basketball is had what they needed, I think, already. I mean, I think they already have what they need from an NIL standpoint.
I did think they need – they probably need a little bit more this year to get
guys. I don't know that they needed it or that they just didn't want to give it. But I wonder, I agree with that. But I can't imagine that if they really, if it came down to having, you know, taking the team up a notch and this was the difference maker at Indiana, I can't believe that whomever it is, whether it's Tyler Harris or Scott Dolson or some said, hey man, I hate to come back to you, but this, This is the last piece that coach needs to really get this thing kickstarted. I just can't believe that that guy's not out there.
No, I agree, because after what they saw what happened last year, and they saw that how much more difficult it's going to be this year with the schedule, if they needed one or two pieces to really make a difference, I would think they would come up with the resources to help him get what he needs, and they're doing pretty well in recruiting right now, so he must be all right in terms of having the financial juice to get some players in recruiting. They're getting some pretty good guys. I think last time I read, I think their class ranked high school players 27th in the country for next year.
Yeah, they're going to be fine, and it's going to be fun. I mean,
I'm sure Mendoza was not that was a competitive recruitment. I'm sure it helped to have his brother.
Yes,
I'm sure they had
that. It had an open spot in a great offense.
Right.
Indiana had a lot going for it. They did. It's still, yeah, you're right. It's still, he didn't come for free, baby. No. What's up next for you, brother?
Oh, I'll be paying attention this weekend to the College World Series. See what Louisville can do on Friday night against Oregon State. You know, we got the big drama here is that Jeff Brohm just is on the process of stealing.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Top recruiter. It's a big win for Louisville, and it's sort of the sounding of the alarm, five-star alarm at Kentucky. Is this going to be Mark Stoops' last stand at UK? Because Vince Morrow.
You're jumping off the ship, baby.
Vince Morrow is the guy that kept some a lot of Ohio kids away from Indiana. Remember, Lynn Bowden initially committed to IU, and then he flipped to Kentucky, and there were two or three other of those guys. So if Vince Morrow's at Louisville, Kentucky's – I think we're headed towards a coaching change at Kentucky. That's what I guess I'll say.
Yeah, one season away from that. Hey, it's a Pacers and Racers Wednesday, baby, as the Racers are continuing the College World Series coming up this weekend, and the Pacers tonight in game three.
They better win this game tonight.
I've said the same thing. This is an extraordinarily important game. I think both of these home games are important, to be honest with you. You lose either one of them, you give up home court advantage to a very dangerous team. So we'll see. Rick Bozich from WDRB.com. Appreciate you, my friend, as always.
Right. Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Make sure you're giving him a follow. Thank each and every one of you. A big thanks also to Dylan and Dylan Sin and Kyle Nenrip as well. Back tomorrow with another great program. A coach will be with us, Bob Kravitz, Chris Denary, and Nick Costco from On Three talking some football. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. Go out and have yourselves a great day. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.